Welcome to the Thank You Rob podcast, episode number
21,
unofficially sponsored by Pearson's Salted Nut Roll, made right here in St. Paul, Minnesota. Don't be a butthole, eat a Pearson's Salted Nut Roll. You can check out past episodes of this show at thankyourob.com, where you can also check out my graphic design work, which is mind-blowing and life-altering, known as I Define Design. You can also check out my other podcast called Some People's Kids Podcast. While you're at it, check out this podcast on Fuzz Talk Radio at fuzztalkradio.com. So, guest today is Mesh One of Lakai Junction.
Yep, Lakai Junction.
Mesh One, how you doing?
Good, and yourself?
All right, we're here at your living quarters. What would you call this place?
I would call this my home base. After days work, this is where I relax, shut out the world, and reconstitute.
Do you wake up in the morning and scream, fuck the world?
Not at all.
Okay, good.
Not at all.
All right.
I wake up and I say, how can I change the world?
Right. Oh, nice, nice. I like this guy already. Well, last episode I had Slim Chance of Crunchy Kids on the show. Are you familiar with with this individual, Chance?
Yeah,
he's a good guy.
Good group. I know they released an album. I haven't copped it yet, but digging what I've heard so far.
You know, and again, Chance was another recommendation of Ace, and I had not heard Crunchy Kids before. But, I mean, I kind of checked out their stuff online as I did with Lakai, and he gave me a copy of the album, and it's been in my CD player ever since.
Nice.
So, let's say, for instance, someone were to maybe give me a copy of their album. Maybe their CD would be in my CD player as I leave here today. I'm just saying.
Understood.
I'm just saying. But we discussed Crisscross. You remember those guys, Crisscross?
Yes, I do. There was a... I remember because of the backwards clothes.
Right.
Cross Colors was the shit at the time.
Right.
The rich kids had Jerboes.
Yep.
And I didn't have Jerboes.
Neither did I. I did have some Cross Colors.
Same here.
You know what's awesome? I remember, speaking of Cross Colors, now I grew up in north of the cities, East Bethel, St. Francis area, and they weren't very accepting of such things, Cross Colors and whatnot.
Right.
The urban lifestyle, let's say.
Yeah.
Or clothing, rather. But I had this purple pants, this purple shirt. It was horrible. It was horrible. And it was like a purple plaid on top of that. Right? And I've always had a pretty good sense of humor. And there was these, I was like a freshman in high school, and these like senior soccer players were kind of dicks. And I remember them walking by me at school one day, and one of them called me Grimace. I was like, you know, as much as...
Better than Barney.
Yeah, right, right, right. But I was like, it was funny to me. It was funny, man. I was like, yeah, okay, I get it. I can laugh at that.
They were just jealous.
Yeah.
Because all they got is soccer, and the best part of their life is over because high school soccer's done.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen them go pro yet. You're right. You're right.
And even if they did, soccer's not really big in America.
Right. But there was a little correlation I wanted to make that I forgot to mention with Chance about Crisscross. Now, they're two kids from Atlanta. One black kid, one of, what's the correct term for the PC word for a mixed race?
Mulatto? Mixed?
Okay, we're going with that.
For me, it's a fellow human being.
Right.
I mean, but... If we're to put the PC cap on, I'd say mixed.
Mixed, okay. We'll go with that.
All right.
And if that's offensive, I'm sorry.
No, not at all. I have thick skin.
But, okay, so they're both named Chris. They're both from Atlanta. Black kid, mixed kid. Then you got Kid and Play. Same scenario. They're both named Chris. I think they're both from Atlanta. One black, one mixed. It's just, that's odd. That's odd.
Small world.
It is. It really is.
It's a very small world.
Small hip-hop world.
Good hip-hop world here in the city.
Kid and Play needs to come back. That's what I want to see.
And they will. Once they reach the end of their finances, like all other groups that come back, they're like, hey, we're out of money, so we were big, and we know that all the people that loved us are, you know, working their 9-to-5s and have more money.
I just want to see House Party 5.
5?
Yeah.
I want to see the hairdos come back.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're here today. We're going to talk about CCR.
Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah, CCRA. And you're familiar with the big hits, of course. I'm sure everyone's heard the on the classic rock stations, Bad Moon Rising or...
Absolutely. I remember watching the original American Werewolf in London and that song coming on and the transformation that the guy took into the werewolf. I was like, yeah. And that was as a little kid. My parents were okay. They took me to see movies like The Shining when I was 3 years old. And my mom was like, yeah, you were walking down to your grandma's house crying the whole way. Mom, why did you take me to see that movie? But
yelling, Red Rum.
Red Rum, Red Rum. Red Rum.
Well, okay, so I just want to give a little history of the band. The band consisted of lead vocalist, lead guitarist, and primary songwriter John Fogerty, and his brother and rhythm guitarist Tom Fogerty. And then the bassist, Stu Cook, and drummer, Doug Clifford. Now, most of these guys in the rock world are kind of pretty well-known. John Fogerty, obviously, because of his solo career.
Absolutely.
And the hit song, Center Field.
Oddly enough, went to a baseball game yesterday. Not a huge fan, but regardless.
Yeah.
But that was a big song for him in his solo career.
Right. It was dubbed swamp music. We call it Southern Rock. Or classic rock, whatever. But they're a pretty well-known band, obviously. Number 82 on Rolling Stone's Greatest Artists of All Time, right?
Just 82?
Just 82.
Ah, should climb up a bit.
Well, when you got, like, Justin Bieber, you know, that's going to knock you down to 82.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Madonna? Actually, Madonna's probably, I don't know, whatever. But they were inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1993. They deserved it.
Absolutely. Should have been sooner, but
right.
They got their due.
Some things you may not know. The band was at first signed to a label and went by the name The Gollywogs. The Gollywogs.
Wonder what happened to The Gollywogs label.
I don't know.
Should look that up.
Yeah.
See if they're still doing any promotions.
So what if you signed... What if Lakai was signed to a label... It was like such a sweet deal you couldn't turn it down. And they're like, here's the thing. You got to go by the Gollywogs. That's the new name.
No.
No?
No. I'm not going to do it because, you know, I'm not balling off of this at this point in life, and I'm doing pretty good for myself without it. So, you know, to compromise myself on something like that, I wouldn't want to be like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for checking out the Gollywogs. We hope we're going to do a good show for you, and we hope you have a good evening.
That sounds very proper. It does. It's one of those names, isn't it?
You know, maybe, you know, Unikiss, try myself, jump up on stage in a three-piece, you know, suit, do a little routine.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that would be good for the Bollywog label.
Something I didn't know about CCR here. They're pretty short-lived. Like, pretty much 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. Basically 68 to 71. But they knocked out a lot of music. 7 albums worth.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's work. That's that dedication.
That it is. And in somewhere in there, John Fogerty and Stu Cook were drafted. So they weren't even around. And a little setback for the group. Coast Guard. They were in the Coast Guard. They were discharged in 68 and came back, hit it hard. They were like, fuck you, Gollywogs. We're going by CCR now. Yep. Now the name, Creedence Clearwater Revival... came from, it took three elements to put that name together. Tom Fogerty's friend, Creedence Newball. I don't know who that is. And then the Clearwater came from a TV commercial for Olympia Beer.
It must be brewed with clear water.
Yes, there you go. That would make sense. And then Revival, which spoke to the four members' renewed commitment to their band when they all rejoined after the...
So they were... Comeback. Creedence Clearwater before, and then once the two came back from the draft...
They were the Gollywogs before, and then they came back and reinvented the steel before Pantera was around. Are you a Pantera fan?
I've heard some of their music, not a huge follower.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's good workout music, I tell you what.
I'll have to look it up, as I'm a fan of working out.
But here's another interesting fact. So they recorded 7 albums in that little time frame of 68 to 71... and the last year without Tom Fogerty in 71, Tom Fogerty passed away. He had AIDS.
That I did not know.
Tom Fogerty. But it wasn't anything sexual. It was a blood transfusion gone wrong.
Oh, my goodness.
And that shit happens, man. Dirty toilet seats, door handles, you know. Where yeah. You just get AIDS anywhere these days.
Well, let's hope it doesn't mutate to, you know, airborne. Somebody coughs on you, and the right. next thing you know, you're dropping dead in the middle of traffic. Well, we found another one dead of AIDS.
Right, yeah. CCR never had a number one hit. Did you know that?
I am very disappointed. That I did not know, and I'm surprised, actually.
Right. These are facts, man. These are just facts. John Fogerty apparently was a control freak, big time. Big time. And he wouldn't allow input from any of the other band members when it came to the songwriting. So much so that Tom Fogerty, who was his brother, left the band numerous times. Was talked into returning. Yeah, brothers.
They are brothers. Yeah. That's understandable.
Yeah. It wasn't until their last album, which was called Mardi Gras, that John Fogerty demanded that the other members of the band write and record and contribute to the material instead of him writing it all.
That would be tough conditions to work under. Now, if I was one of the other three members. Although I understand, like, you know, if you have an idea and you want that idea to come out smooth, flawless, my guess would be to just suggest it to your friends, like, hey, here's the idea. However, right. I could see also that after a time it being muddied down to where it's not getting, you're losing your vision, your what it is you're trying to capture in the mm-hmm. music. So I'm a little torn on that. If I was one of the three members, I could definitely see saying, you know what, screw you, I'm out of this band.
Right.
Have a nice life.
Yeah.
You know.
Apparently no one else had the balls. Tom Fogerty did. Yeah. But then
he was
back.
His brother, too.
Yeah, right,
so
right. Yeah,
that I'm probably sure they, made it I'm easier. Sure they went out in the back of the shed and fought over the name change as well.
Right, right. Now, I'm not familiar with their albums. You know, I basically have the like their greatest hits albums.
Right, same here.
And, I mean, I love every single song that I'm sure I'd love the albums, too. But now their last album they did, Rolling Stone called it the worst album that I've ever heard by a major rock band. So I would like to hear that album just to hear why the hell someone would say that. It's called Mardi Gras.
Maybe that was one of the reasons that threw him into like 87th or 82nd.
Right, it could be. Yeah, that album set him back. So in 72, the label announced the disbanding of CCR. The band has never formally reunited. Although Stu, old Stu Cook and Doug Clifford did go on to form what's called Creedence Clearwater Revisited.
Hmm.
Yeah.
No, that sounds original.
Yeah. And that was in 95. Although in 97, there was a legal injunction by Fogerty, John Fogerty, to change the name, and they had to. So they changed it to Cosmos Factory.
Oh, I was thinking maybe the Gollywogs.
Yeah, I should probably go back to that. So that was a thing. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom Fogerty passed away in 1990, so I don't know what the hell happened to him. 1990. He just left it was the final straw. He was like, fuck you, John. I'm out of here. And this time I mean it.
Yeah, this time I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say. And no, I won't write a song to try and make up for it.
So, okay, Fantasy Records was their record label. And actually, CCR had one of the worst record contracts in the history of music. Because they don't have rights to any of their songs. And it pisses off... I don't know about the other members, but John Fogerty especially. That's why you'll hear like Fortunate Son and Who'll Stop the Rain in commercials a lot, you know? But John Fogerty, because he wrote all the music, he does still get paid when they get, you know...
played.
So it's like he hates that the shit gets used for commercial use, but he still collects a paycheck
sure.
from it, you know? So I'm sure he doesn't hate it that much.
Yeah, he can, you know, complain, piss and moan all he wants, but the fact of the matter is when he gets random checks in the mail, he's
right.
like, oh... I didn't see the commercial, so...
Right, right.
You know.
Old John Fogerty, his thoughts on the band. I'm going to quote him here. In 1997, I was alone when I made that music. I was alone when I made the arrangements. I was alone when I added the background vocals, guitars, and other stuff. I was alone when I produced and mixed the albums. The other guys showed up only for rehearsals and the days we made the actual recordings. Now, this is one, I don't know, you know... Really, this makes him sound like a dick, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, then why didn't he do it by himself?
Right. Yeah, he couldn't even perform. He couldn't perform the CCR songs in public when he was playing concerts for a while. And isn't that fucked up?
Assholinitis?
Yeah.
Or what was his excuse?
Well, because of the label, the whole
the
contract.
Deal, they wouldn't let him.
They wouldn't let him. Yeah.
Why wouldn't a record label want their music?
Well, I'm sorry. This is when he went solo.
Okay.
Yeah. So he couldn't perform his own music. He can only perform music that he's written and recorded from that point forward.
Got it.
You know? But so right now, John Fogerty is recording a bunch of. I think like the expiration of the contract has finally come around or something, that he's now re-recording these older songs with new with like Kid Rock did a Bad Moon Rising or something with John Fogerty. That's pretty cool. I'd check it out. Of course, their biggest songs then, Proud Mary, which Tina Turner. It was Tina Turner who did Proud Mary, and it was almost bigger.
Than
CCR's version, which was the original version.
It's Tina Turner.
Right, yeah. Bad Moon Rising, of course. Fortunate Son, which is often used in, like, Vietnam-era movies. And
to depict the draft dodgers.
Yeah. Down on the Corner, Born on the Bayou. Good music. Just good music. I'm glad that you went along wanting to talk about CCR, because
I like CCR.
I talk rap and hip hop. I'm like, you know, I can only talk about it so much. I'm ready for something new.
All right. Well, I'm glad I had the opportunity to switch it up.
So, what's your history with CCR then? You said your folks listened to it?
Yeah, my folks listened to it all. I have really vivid memories. I grew up on 25th and 14th as a young child. South Minneapolis, and
I grew up on 2-1 and Lewis in Long Beach.
Yeah. And you know, I just remember my parents, and the neighbor across the street was as equal a fan of Creedence as my parents were. And that guy at the time, I guess the best way I could describe him is a hippie in his day.
Yeah.
You know, and he'd have the speakers outside, and you know, speakers back then were huge contraptions, and he'd have them outside and blaring in the neighborhood. Nobody seemed to really mind, which is cool. So
right.
I remember running up and down the street, playing football tag with friends, stuff like that, and listening to CCR. And then, again, when I saw the American Werewolf in London original version, and that song was in there, whenever I hear Bad Moon Rising, I think of that transformation scene, because the special effects in that movie at the time were pretty cool.
Right. It wasn't Teen Wolf.
No, not at all. It wasn't candy-coated.
Right. So the music, though, it's definitely something that you hear, and it brings you back.
Absolutely.
To a good
and
place.
That's,
a good
that's
place,
the point
I
of. That, I think that's the point of all music, is we attach memories to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even think about it at the time when we hear a new song, whatever it is, what memories are associated with it. But when it comes to play a couple years down the road, you're taken back and you're like, oh, I remember when that song was first down and I first heard it.
For those that are unfamiliar, because this is kind of a hip-hop based podcast, you know.
Yep.
Dig into the records, you know, go to your local record. You can definitely find CCR albums on vinyl. Of course, on CD2 or even MP3, but it's worth checking out. Or watch, Forrest Gump? There's a couple
CCR songs in Forrest Gump.
You could watch The Wonder Years. I'm sure there's some in there. It really captures that era.
Yep.
You know? It's good shit. It's good music. Like you said, as a kid, the guy putting speakers outside, it's like, it's not going to offend anyone. There's no offensive lyrics.
Nope, not at all.
You know what? To be honest with you, half the time you can't understand what the fuck John Fogerty's saying.
It takes a few times to listen to the songs to get the gist and what it is he's saying.
They're from the Bayou. So there's definitely some twang in there or something.
The Bayou influence is thick.
Yeah, it is. Cool. All right, man, let's take a little break here, and we'll come back and we'll dig into the mind of Mesh One.
All right.
The Some People's Kids Podcast. It's like the Thank You, Rob podcast, because Rob is on it.
Rod Small.
But it also has another guy.
Who is it?
His name is Chuck Chase.
Chuck Chase.
And there aren't any guests.
No guests.
So it's not really like the Thank You, Rob podcast at all.
I'm confused.
So if you thrive for useless knowledge.
Useless.
And really funny shit.
Yes.
Check out peopleskids.com. Fuck yeah.
My mic sounds nice.
Yeah, it does. Well, we're back. Mesh One.
Good evening.
He's in the house. Well, we're in his house. We're here. welcome again. Thanks again for doing the show. I appreciate that.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Shout out to Amber Ace Cleveland one more time. Pretty much this is her show. I'm going to be honest. This is her show. I'm just doing her dirty work for her.
Love
so
you,
she
Ace.
Can go to some other hip-hop show. For,
she's everywhere at once. Right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'll vote for her when she gets into politics.
Right, yeah. Well, let's get into the interview here.
All right.
Lakai Junction, right?
Yes, sir.
First, let's start with that. How did that come about?
Basically, how it came about was when I came back from my tour, there was a little unhappiness in my life, and I kind of figured out the reason was because I stepped away from the music for a while to get my shit right, you know, be there for my kids. And when I came back from Iraq, there was that void, and I realized it needed to be filled with something that I just have a natural affinity towards. So I started talking with Unicus about it. You know, back in the day when we were cancer, me and Unicus had a little group called Altered Entities, and we had always intended of putting out an album with just him and I on it. And over time, it got to where our guy Tri-D, who we've also known for over 20 years, had some lyrics as well. And then Unicus hit me to this producer that he had been working with for a while, Stray, and we just started banging out music together, and it just formed. And for a couple days, we're like, hey, what are we going to call the group? And Unicus was like, I like Lakai. What do you guys think about Lakai Junction? It basically means home station. So
that's fitting.
Yep.
With your military.
Yep. I was like, you know what, I dig it, let's roll with it and bang out some good music.
Right.
You know?
So did Stray produce the whole album?
No, I produced some of the songs too. Basically what it is an EP release, 10 tracks, my fault. He did 5 of the songs, I did 5 of the songs, mm-hmm. And they're just remixed. So, you know, realistically if it was just one production, it'd be an EP, 5-6 songs, a little intro to it, but we recorded 2 of each song just on different beats.
Right. So it's not just the vocals lifted onto the other song, it gets actually re-recorded
to the beat?
Yeah,
we just re-recorded to the beat, yes.
Nice, that's cool.
Well, how we set it up is we did our writing sessions, and then we're like, all right, this week we're going to knock out these 2 songs, which turned out to be 4 songs.
Okay. And this just came out like last month, right?
Yep.
Okay. How's it been going?
It's been going pretty good all in all. We're back in the studio trying to work out on a full-length album. Have no idea what the title of that is going to be at this time, but we're just in the studio cranking out music.
The title is To Be Determined.
Yes, that's right.
TBD.
You know, yeah, there it is. I'm feeling it.
For now.
I'll propose it. I'll be like, hey, guys, got a great idea.
I remember back in the day when I used to read The Source magazine, you know, they'd always have, like, the upcoming releases, and if there was no title, it would be TBD.
To Be Determined.
Yeah, and the first time I was like, what does that mean? What does it mean? And then you find out. Yeah.
And it's less exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, why is
everybody's That means they don't
album...
know what the fucking title's
going
to be.
Yeah, why is everybody's album TBD?
Right.
What the hell's going on?
It's a new hip-hop trend.
Isn't that copyright infringement?
Yeah. So how long have you been in the game here?
Well, let's see here. When I was 14, some friends and I went to a house party and...
Kid and Play were there, of course.
Kid and Play were there, full effect. No, actually it was Cypress Hill, Tribe Called Quest, stuff like that. And there was this cat rapping and, you know, a little cypher going on. And I popped my head in there and I was like, oh, what's this? And dude was like, man, get out of this circle if you ain't rhyming. So at that point, started rhyming. I'm 38 now, so 14. Again, there was about a 7-year hiatus from when I took a break. But for the most part... from 14 to today, so 24
right.
years.
Damn.
Holy crap.
You're like too short.
That's right.
You're like
OG.
LL Cool J. Uncle L.
That's right.
So from that point forward, do you at what point did you actually record something?
As far as when I got back?
Well, from that
the
house party scenario.
What happened was I'd say about it was about 5 or 6 years before cancer recorded anything.
Okay.
And at that time it was Unicus, New, and myself, and we recorded Now. which was our first first release, which was a tape, just to date us.
Tapes are coming back, man. Well, I don't know if they're coming back, but I know that some people have been putting them out. Yeah, just kind of a, I think it's more of a
gimmick,
nostalgic
sure, thing. Sure, absolutely.
You know?
Because there's a lot of people, it's like when, you know, old bands go defunct and they run out of money, they come back and the people have, you know, that nostalgia attitude and they're like, oh, they're back, so I'm going to pick up that product. I'm sure there's plenty of people that still have functioning tape players.
Right.
Enough to facilitate a run of 100 or 200, right, you know, yeah, if it's yeah. local.
I would have to dig to find a tape deck or something.
Thank goodness but there is, for eBay.
You know, there's something to say. You know, like, people listen to vinyl because they like the sound of vinyl.
Absolutely.
I like the sound of
the
vinyl.
The scratch yeah. on the needle, absolutely.
Yeah. And cassette tapes have a distinct sound. Yep. They really do. Especially when they get eaten.
You know? Get the pencil out, pull yep. it out of the deck, and start reeling it back in.
I can't say that I remember the 8-track phase. But
no, I missed that one. In the beta or whatever it was, that was like an 8-tracks competition, right, I think. Yeah.
Is it 8-track or 4? What is that, 4-track tapes? Were they 8-track?
No, they were 8-track. They were 8-track tapes. Okay. Yeah.
That dates me right there. I don't even know. But, so from that Cancer album, what happened from there? Give us the history, man.
All right, the history Lay into is, it. The history is I turned 18. I was able to get a loan without a co-signer, and at the time I was like, hey guys, we got to do something serious. So I took out a loan in my name. It wasn't much, $3,000, got some equipment, and sat on the equipment for a while. Didn't really do anything with it. New was like, hey Mesh, are you gonna do anything with this equipment? Because if you're not, I'm gonna take it. So New took it for a little while, started actually figuring out the operations of it, came back to me, showed me what to do, and thank goodness, I love you, New. At that point we started making beats. I didn't really like the equipment I had gotten, this digital Akai. I can't even remember what it was. And I wanted something different. So I remember walking around Uptown with Unikiss, and I saw this ad for an Ensoniq EPS for sale. So I called the dude's number, and lo and behold, I don't know, you know, Cornelius works up at the Nomad. He's bartender, but he's does the production for Prof.
Okay.
It was him who was selling it, and that was the first time I met him. Started chopping it up a little bit, and he showed me some of the operations. From there, everything started going a lot smoother, mm-hmm. making beats on the Ensoniq. Put out 2 tapes, now a network. And then from there, I started working at a job. I went to Europe for a couple months, sold everything I owned. Went to Europe, did some soul searching. And when I came back, I said, all right, guys, I got the master plan. Mm-hmm. We need to work in specific fields so that we can get our music going. I was like, one of us needs to work at like a Kinko's to get the copies for the flyers, all that stuff.
Because, right.
you know, the internet promotions wasn't really up and running in 98, 99, yep. 2000. So, and I was like, another person should get a job at Best Buy and then somebody work at Guitar Center so we get the equipment stuff covered.
Right.
I got a job at Kinko's and that was it. So at that point...
I got to say, man, that's a good plan. It was a good plan.
It was a hookup because I worked at the downtown Kinko's in Minneapolis and First Avenue would come in there and be like, hey, we'll give you tickets to these shows, if you hook us up on some flyers. So I always had tickets to whatever the shows were, which was... It was a good foot in the door. So at that point, too, I started working more on computers and I found Reason, the first version of Reason. Mm-hmm. And... that was a software that I could really get into. I just had an affinity for it. So I started producing my beats on Reason a long time before a lot of people even knew what Reason was. And I turned a few heads locally on the Reason. And from there we did a CD, Inner City Outer Space. Second CD was Quintessential. And then the last Cancer album that I was on was It Wrote Itself. And that came out in 2003.
Okay.
And in the interim, what we had done is there was a little label we had tried to create, Interlock, which was Hyru Specs, Cancer, Twisted Linguistics, Dispute One, who back then was Extreme, Bilal, Tri-D, CMI. who had basically Crescent Moon was in CMI group, and you know, for a while things were going really good. Mm-hmm. As a label, we were doing a lot of local shows. Zach was really good at getting the spots for us to do regular shows at, and was running a jam called Headspin in Dinkytown, which lasted a couple years, and that's where some of the funnest memories I have with the golden era of hip hop was. In about 2003-2004, my daughter was born, and that's when it became really hard for me to balance. At the time, I was doing the production, the engineering, the mixing, the mastering, songwriting, a lot of flyer designs, and trying to promote it. It became just too much for me to balance at the right. same time, and I looked at it as like, what's more important? And I had to choose my kids. For me, it seemed like a no-brainer, so I stepped aside for a minute, and that was a hard, hard day, because at the time, we were really starting to get shows on the road. We were gone 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and I'd come back home with nothing to show for it, and my fiance at the time was like, hey, you know, I appreciate you want to do this music, but, you know, you're not putting food on the table. And the reality right. is I wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't feel like I was fulfilling my role as a provider and as a father for my kids. So, you know, with a heavy heart, I talked to Unicus and knew, and I said, hey guys, I gotta step away. I gotta put this down for now and handle my responsibility as a parent. And that's something that, you know, new comes back at me a lot, because he sees my heavy, it weighed heavy, and even to this day it does. But he was like, hey man, you made the right decision by being there for your kids. Bottom line, you know, don't feel bad that you left us. And, you know, consequently, because of it, realistically, More Than Lights came about, because mm-hmm. Unicus and New were like, hey, what are we going to do? And those guys draw a damn good crowd mm-hmm. and really good music. So I'm happy that in the interim, when I stopped, that they picked the pieces up and moved right along with it.
Right. Damn, man. Damn, dog.
Yeah.
So you're familiar with the Big Zach's book?
Yes.
Right? Have you read that?
Parts of it, yes.
I have not.
No?
But I would love to. Because I would imagine this is your era, too.
Yeah, and I'm in it heavily. He gives me a lot of props, because I did a lot of graffiti right. back in the day, okay. and a lot of my stuff is in his book. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have come up to me and be like, oh, you're Mesh. You know, because he speaks, you know, that's my blood. I'd go to war for that kid.
Right.
You know, I love him to death, and I'm proud of Zach. Good kid.
Yeah.
I can't even say good kid. Good man. He's a good adult. Holds down his business, and I think he's got a second book that's coming out, actually. It's in the editing process, or finishing the editing process. Yeah.
Nice. Shit, I got to get on that first
one. I know.
Do you own the first one?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Well, we're in the same boat, then.
All right.
Although you have read it, some of it, so yes. you're beyond me already. So at what point did you join the military and head overseas?
I joined the military in March of 2005. Did not get deployed until 2009.
So what brought you to that then?
That
decision.
There was a lot of factors with that. I come from a family that's military. Not my parents, my uncle, my grandfather fought in World War II. I guess in some aspects, you know, I saw it as an obligation. I want to serve, as well as at the time I was like, shit, I need something to some benefits for my kids, mm-hmm. like as far as medical benefits, especially with their situation. So it was definitely was awkward at first, initially, because I realized what I was getting into. I joined old enough. I was 29 when I joined, so I knew that I was getting into a head game. Mm-hmm. So basic training was hard, but I knew they were playing mind games, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. So deployment, yeah, that was a separate beast altogether. I mean, there was a lot to a lot to that that led me to my own, okay, I am going to deploy. I got to get ready for it and mentally prepare myself for this deployment.
Mm-hmm. So with the touring and everything that you'd done previous to that, you'd never really spent months away from home, right?
No, the most time that I had spent was about 2 months back in 98. 2 months I sold everything and backpacked in Europe by myself.
Oh, I did the Europe thing, right? Okay.
And that was the best fucking thing in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, that was before family.
Yes, before absolutely. Family, so. Yes.
So I can only imagine what it was like to be deployed with the family back home.
It was it was really hard. You know, when they with the guard, they give, because the guard is only you know, 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year thing, they give the guard members throughout the country, whatever state, about a year's notice. Okay. So we had a year's notice, and from there it started a clock of, we had all these trainings to go to different places to be around the country. For example, the Army sent me to Hawaii for 3 weeks to do some training on the equipment that I've that I hadn't messed with for four years at the time. And when we went to Hawaii, they had put us up in a really dive hotel, and we're on the island of Oahu, and the sergeant first class that I'm with, he was like, no, we're not staying here, watch this. So we go to Waikiki, and he goes to this hotel, Hilton Hotel, right on Waikiki Beach. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you guys stay back here. He starts talking, next thing we know, we're getting the same rate as we were for the cheap hotel. So for 3 weeks we're in Hawaii. And the class schedule for this training was literally 9 a.m. till 3 p.m.
Wow.
And it was...
plenty of free time.
It was a lot of free time. So, yeah. You know...
that's cool.
It was awesome.
Get to see Hawaii?
Yep.
Nice. That's better than the Middle East, I would assume.
Well, it is...
I've never been to the Middle East, so I can't say that.
Yes, it is.
I've never been to Hawaii.
I sincerely mean this when I say I wish that... I see my what I perceive as my country really, you know, twisted definition of what's defined success, and over there those people have nothing considering what we have here. Mm-hmm. I wish I could transplant all selfish Americans over there for just a couple weeks, because that's really all I think it'd take for them to really open their eyes and say, wow, I really do have it good. Yeah, yeah, there's problems here, and I get that, but over there, you know, you got kids kicking a 10-year-old can around having the time of their life.
Right.
Kids nowadays here, they get pissed if they don't get an iPad for Christmas.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Damn. So it's an eye-opener.
It is definitely an eye-opener.
So how long were you over there?
15 months.
Okay.
It was, 15 months I was away from here. There was 1 month at Fort Lewis in Washington. Beautiful, by the Puget Sound. Oh my goodness, that state is amazing. So that's the pre-mobilization, getting trained up, meeting some new people who are going to go with us. And then they sent us to Baghdad for a month. And then after Baghdad, we went down to Basra for the remainder of the time.
Okay. And then 15 months, and then you come back here. Is that correct?
And yep.
Then what year is it then?
It is 2010.
Okay.
At that time, excuse me. What happened was, we went back to Fort Lewis for a couple weeks, and because I was a sergeant at the time, they were like, hey, we're not going to let you go home until you finish your NCO school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you guys get to go home. I've been away from my family a month longer than most of them had, because I had to leave early because of what I do. And I was like, well, who's going to be here at Fort Lewis when I get done with this 3-week course so that I can make sure I get home? So when I get back with this from this 3-week course, there's no Minnesota National Guard members. And I felt I was pissed. I'm not going to lie, because mm-hmm. I had been away from my family, and they were like, oh, don't worry. They gave me all the reassurances. We'll take care of you. We'll make sure all that stuff's taken care of us. The soldiers at Fort Lewis were the ones that take care of us. So shout out to them. They got us plane tickets back home, and, you know, called my coming back home was, it was a shock for a while. Mm-hmm. It was really, you know, a level of disbelief, like, this is done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna lie, like, when I got back home, I There was about 20 of us that had to stay at this class for an extra 3 weeks. And when I saw one of my fellow soldiers hug his girlfriend and just break down, I'm not going to lie, I lost it. Because the relief of I'm home, I'm right. really home, set in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so my father, I called him and I said, hey, I'm at the airport. He gets my kids. And pulls up at the driveway at the airport, and right away my son's face is on the glass and I can see him screaming, dad, dad, dad. And my daughter was hiding behind balloons. It took her 3 days to not hide from me, because she said she didn't want to believe that I was home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wow. that was hard.
That's real. That's deep.
Yep.
Damn. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yep.
That's fucking experience right there, man.
It is, definitely.
That I'll never experience, you know?
It's definitely something I don't want to experience again.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done my due.
So are you gonna be deployed again? Is there a chance of that?
It's with I'd like to say no, but I can't really say.
Mm-hmm.
My contract ends March of next year, and if I renew it, I'm going to do the whole 20 and get the retirement out of it, because it would just make sense to do that, because the next contract 6 years, that would put me at 15, five more years, and I get a retirement so I can work a job and collect a Army pension.
Okay. So now that you're back, so you come back in 2010, you said, right?
Yep.
At what point were you like, okay, I'm going to get back into this music thing, let's do this?
It took a few months. I'd say about 6 months, because there was still some really unraveling the deployment in my head, so to speak, in the experience, and really acclimating back to what I saw as everybody here moving in such slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
Because over there being rocketed and mortared every night, and then coming back here, it really was like people were in a slow motion mindset. So it took me about 6 months, and that's when I started, you know, talking to Unikiss more serious about, hey, let's make some music, mm-hmm. you know, have some fun, do some music, and see where it goes.
And that's how Lakai Junction came about.
That is it.
We have just come full circle right there. That's right. What happened. It just happened.
I'm okay with full circle. It brings a story, it ties it back in, and it shows the interconnectivity of everything.
Mm-hmm. So you guys have played as Lakai, right?
Yep.
Release party was last month,
mm-hmm.
right? Did you get the album? Is it pressed?
We do have CDs. We have CDs, and we also have download cards. Okay. I guess there's a kind of a, how do we want to approach this now that really needs to be, in my eyes, the way I see it, and this part of my military training that's kicking in here is that needs to be defined mission-wise as far as how we want to go about attacking that beast.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done the CDs and are doing download cards as well from Bandcamp.
Right. Okay. So what are your inspirations right now for music, as far as what are you listening to? Not Pantera.
Not Pantera. I'm not listening to Pantera.
could be.
Big Jess. I love Big Jess.
Who doesn't? Everyone
seriously.
Loves Big Jess.
And dude, no. There's a lot of artists in the city that are don't get their just dues. I'd say Illuminous 3, I'm a fan of. Now if you're talking locally,
yeah.
Illuminous
3. Let's cover
3.
Both.
All right. Illuminous 3, I like Half Dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Crunchy Kids. Sean Anonymous. Locally, Lakai Junction, of course, because our music's dope as hell.
Yeah.
Uprock from Abstract Pack, and big shout out to Abstract Pack. Those are my peeps, my fam, St. Paul. I'd say that really covers Brother Ali. I'm a fan of Brother Ali. Gotta admit it. That dude's got some good deep lyrics.
He does. I agree. But anyways, on a national level, who's your... Who are you listening to? The fans want to know.
The fans will know on a national level. I support local homegrown talent. I don't. I don't. I don't venture as much outside.
Right.
Yep. Because a lot of the stuff that I've heard around the country just doesn't have that Midwest feel.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I also forgot to give big shouts to Carnage and Musab. So those are my cats too. Right. So I mean,
so when you were overseas, did you spread the word of, I mean, Minnesota's Twin Cities getting huge, man.
Minnesota hip hop, Twin Cities hip hop has always been, from my mindset of things, has always had a huge pool of talent.
Mm-hmm.
There is a big push by a lot of people now. It, almost to a point, it's so hard to keep up with new acts coming out.
Right.
And it's an, you know, injustice not to. So it is to my fault that I don't keep up as much as I could. However, I from my past experience with more open support around the country and comparing that to the Midwest, specifically the Twin Cities, there's just no, it's something in the water. The people here are gifted.
Right.
Period.
And apparently there's cocaine in the water.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
There was they tested the water in 50 lakes in the state. Now, granted, there's 100,000.
Wait, which lakes?
I don't know. I would like to know because they tested the waters in 50 lakes, and 33% of them had cocaine in the water, in the lakes. I don't know how the fuck that happens.
How do they?
Like, if I had cocaine, which I don't, and I never will, and I never have, I would not throw it in the water of a lake unless whatever you're getting pulled over at.
So are that many people running at various places around the state that are like, oh shit, there's the cops. We better dump our stash. There's a lake. Let's throw it in there.
Right. Or I guess how does it work? Like when you flush something, does it end up in the lake in a runoff or something? Or
good call.
I don't know. Kids these days, kids. Yeah. Cool. So yeah, thanks for doing the show, man. Appreciate it.
Hey,
Mesh
thanks.
One. Where can people check out the music?
You can go to bandcamp.com/Lakai Junction. We have our music as well on iTunes.
And how do you spell Lakai?
Lakay. And Junction, of course, is JUNQTION.
Right. You know, that's when you typically name something like that, you're like, no, let's do it like this.
Absolutely.
You don't think you're going to have to spell it out for someone someday.
No, you do. You got to do it.
Yeah.
That's all right. I mean, we didn't want to spell Junction the correct way.
Right.
We were happy with the misspelling.
And then you guys are on Facebook, too?
That is correct.
Okay.
Follow us on Facebook. Click like.
Thumbs hit us up.
And we'll, we'll do what we can to make sure you get a copy of the album. At our earliest convenience, again, Bandcamp, we do have some download material for free. So check it out.
Cool. Well, thanks again for doing the show, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate having me.
You can check out thankyourob.com. That's Rob with the normal spelling. ROBQ.com. I'm just kidding. You can listen to the Thank You Rob podcast past episodes. I've had, Half Dozen was on a few episodes ago. Just some good people. Everyone I've interviewed so far has been good people, and I'm glad I finally, because you meet people at shows and shit, and it's just in passing. You know, when you do this one out,
you don't get the time to spend with them and get some Q&A in. And
yeah, and I'm glad we did this, man. You get to know people, intimate. You get intimate, and that's what I like. But go to thankyourob.com. You can check out the past episodes of the show. Everyone in the past, Amber, Ace Cleveland was on the show. And we talked about the brat-a-tat-tat. But it was a good episode. There's many good episodes. There's been some good times. And this is definitely a unique one, and I'm glad we did this. I also do graphic design work. I got to plug that. iDefine Design. I got to plug it. And I have this long-running deal, okay? Here's the thing with hip-hop these days. Anyone can rap because they can do it on a computer. Anyone can do graphic design because they can do it on a computer. It's killing the industry. But they can't do what I can do, which is this. If you have an album pressed on vinyl, it has to be vinyl. I'll do the album artwork for free. Free. And it won't look Bush League. We'll do it good. And this is for anyone listening right now. Anyone listening. So I got that. iDefine Design. Check it out. And then I have another podcast. It's called Some People's Kids Podcast. It's a comedy podcast. Me and my boy Chuck Chase, we talk entertainment, movies, music, all that shit. And actually, he's going to be joining me at Big Jess's The Musab CD release party next Friday at, where is it at?
That's at The Nomad.
The Nomad, yes.
Yep.
Yep. And you're going to be there, too.
Absolutely.
You're going to play your honorable mention track.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, man. That I got to give much props and respect to Big Jess. That kid undertook a huge challenge. And
with the honorable mention series?
Yes. Yeah. It should not be slept on whatsoever. And the scope of that 4-CD project is monumental, especially just for the whole Twin Cities hip-hop scene in general.
Yeah. And I actually missed the last honorable mention show, which was like, from what I understand from Ace telling me, was like, you go on, you do your song, you get off the stage, you go on, you get up, perform.
A lot of coordination that had to happen.
Yeah. So I'm also, because now we're throwing in, I'm going to be doing this podcast live, and people are going to have to come through and like do something, and then they play the song. I don't know how it's going to work, but
all right, I'll be up there.
I am confident that Ace is going to make it happen, and it's going to be fun. So come out to that show.
If anybody can, she can.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So cool. That's all I got, man. Thanks again for doing the show.
Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, listener. Listen again. Listen in the past to the past episodes in the future. Yeah, I think I lost myself there.
No, that kind of makes sense.
Sure, kind of, yeah. Anything makes sense, I can make it sound good.
All right.
All right, man. Thanks for listening. And any last words over there?
Hey, Twin Cities, I love y'all.
Oh, it's love. It's all love. All right, we're out.